This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting muslimcentral.com/donate.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Wa Salli Wa Sallam Ala Sayyid Al Awaleen Wal Akhireen, Nabiyana Muhammadin, Wa Ala Alihi Wa Sahbihi Wa Barak Wa Sallam. All praise are due to Allah, Lord of the Worlds, and peace and blessings be constantly showered upon our beloved Prophet Muhammad, the Master of the First and the Last, his family, his companions, and all those who call to his way and establish his Sunnah to the Day of Judgment. As to what follows, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Alhamdulillah, this is another chance for us in the new Muslim corner to review and to try to come to an understanding of the foundations of Islam. And that is so important today in a world where there is so much information that is flowing around.
Is this the new beginner's class?
Yeah. Come on in, man. Come on in. Yeah, this is so important today in a world where we are surrounded by information. Some of that information is beneficial, and some of it is confusing. And so the intention of this class is to take off the veils, take off the misunderstandings, the stereotypes, and to go to the basis of what Islam is. So that a person who's interested in Islam or a person who has just embraced Islam can actually benefit from the essence of what Islam is and not what the culture of different people has put forward. So in this light, when we look at the word Islam, we are talking about submission to the creator of the heavens and the earth. And we understood that if there was any quality that a Muslim could be described with, how would you describe? You see somebody coming along, you meet somebody. What should be the most important thing about that person? It's not that they eat halal food. It's not that they look a certain way or they speak a certain language, but it would be the Arabic word tawheed, which is unity, monotheism. And that is the unity in our understanding of the creator of the heavens and the earth. And that is something that was understood by people throughout the planet. This is the root of Islam. This is the basis of what the religion actually is and not what is projected by the media or what you might have misunderstood. And so we are taught that prophets came to every nation and every tribe. And in the Quran, the book of scripture of the Muslims, in the chapter of the Bee, Surah An-Nahl, Allah tells us, وَلَقَدْ بَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُولًا أَنْ اعْبُدُوا اللَّهَ وَاجْتَنِبُوا الطَّاغُوتَ. And we have sent to every nation a messenger, informing them that they should worship Allah and avoid false deities. So every nation at one point had somebody like this. And if you go to the root of most cultures, or what is left, because some cultures are like oral cultures, and maybe there's not much trace, but if you can go to the root of most cultures around the world, you will see that at one point in time, there was an individual or a group, there was strong belief in one God. Whether they called that one God the Great Spirit, the Cosmic Spirit, whatever their concept was, but it was that there was one being who existed before life that we know. And he said, be and it is, and all life came into being. That's the Creator. Okay, and that is the essence of Islam. When we talk about the word Islam today, people will generally connect it with Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, who lived over 1,400 years ago. But he described himself as the seal of the prophets and messengers, not the first prophet of Islam. And this is important in our generic understanding of what this faith is, because you don't have to be a certain color, a certain language, dress in a certain way to be a Muslim. And after the death of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he had asked his followers to spread this message, take it around the world. And surprisingly enough, within 100 years, Islam reached much of the known world at that time. And not with great armies, not with weapons of mass destruction, but with an interchange, a movement of people for different reasons. It spread around the world, and within that 100 years, just about all the major religions either came under the banner of Islam or recognized the importance of this religion. So, Tawheed is a key point. And we emphasize this because this is the basis of being a Muslim, that you believe in one God. You're a monotheist. And somebody might say they're a monotheist who believes in the river as God, because there's only one river they believe in. So therefore, over the years, the scholars have put together some different explanations of Tawheed in order for us to be able to fully understand what the term means. Because sometimes, and what was happening is that people were coming into Islam with their own religions, with their own way of looking at the world. The people who were Hindus had many different gods. Buddhists had Buddha. Christianity, or what was being taught in the name of Christianity, was affected by Greek and Roman polytheism, many gods. Okay, so therefore, one of these definitions we're using as a base of understanding the word Tawheed. And so we said that when we say Allah is one, we mean Allah is one in His rule, that He is the Lord, He is the Master, and there is no rival to Allah. Okay, and that we learn in Arabic is called Tawheed al-Rububiyyah. Okay, so it's one Rabb. And that is shared by some other people who believed that maybe the Son is the Supreme Being. But that's the first part of it. no rival to Allah. Secondly, it is that Allah is one in His names and descriptions. There is none like Allah. And so the Quran says, Laysa kamithlihi shay, there is nothing like Allah. So therefore, if somebody says that man is God, then that's wrong. Because our belief in Tawheed is nothing similar to Allah. The sun can't be God. The moon, the mountains, the rivers, no part of creation. And that was called Tawheed al-Asma wa Sifat. So that is unifying our understanding of the names and descriptions of Allah. And the third part is that Allah is one in His divinity and worship. There is no partner with Him. So the only divine being is Allah. And when we say divine, we're saying no, He makes no mistakes. He's perfect in memory, perfect in power, perfect in authority, divine. Okay, and so therefore, He is the one who deserves alone to be worshipped. Okay, so that's Tawheed al-Uluhiyya or Tawheed al-Ibadah. And that is the section of Tawheed that brought some confrontations. Because when Tawheed was taught and accepted by people in different parts of the world, once it was established that we're only going to worship Allah, there was reactions that came. And Tawheed al-Ibadah is a very important subject. These three forms of Tawheed, if you go to an Islamic university, you go to higher studies, in many universities, they go into this in details on the highest levels. So this just gives you, you know, a basis of Tawheed. The opposite or the antithesis of Tawheed, monotheism, is polytheism. So that means that you're taking a partner with Allah. Remember, the last form of Tawheed said there's no partners. So that is like the human being, instead of praying directly to Allah, then goes through the partner to get to Allah. So that person believes in God, but they believe there is a force that can lead them to the Creator. And it comes in different forms. I spent some time in Southern Africa, and there in Southern Africa and in China as well, they have what they call ancestor worship. So they believe that your ancestors, when they pass away, that they go into the hereafter, and they're closer to God. So therefore, if you can pray to your ancestors, if you can keep a good relationship with your ancestors, then you got a good chance of having your prayers accepted. So that's a form of shirk too, because you're going through the ancestors to get to God. See, so any form that this takes, that would be considered shirk, that we learned in our previous discussion, is the worst possible thing that a person can do. So we looked at shirk last week in Rububiya. Now we want to look at forms of shirk, just to show you how it manifested. This is shirk in Asma wa Sifat, in the names and descriptions of Allah. How did people make partners? Or how does it manifest in cultures? So to give you some examples, in the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, the Arabs at that time, they knew Allah. They knew that there was a Creator. And part of the proof of that is the fact that Ibrahim, alayhi salam, built the first house of worship in Mecca for the one God. So the belief in God, in one God, was there. But what, after some time, when people got weak, they wanted something to see. Because sometimes people need to see something material in order to really believe in God. And so they took from the names of the Creator and they made gods. So one of the names of the creator that we learned is Al-Aziz. Al-Aziz, right? The most powerful and majestic. Izzah is, you know, strength and power. So they made, and you'll see a person by Abdul Aziz. So Abd means you're the servant or slave of Al-Aziz. Al-Aziz is the name of Allah. Okay? So what the pagan Arabs did was they took this name and they made an idol and they called it Al-Uzza. Al-Uzza. And they set up an idol for this. And so that would be shirk coming out of the name of Allah. They also took from the name Al-Mannan, who is the most kind and generous, and they made another idol called Al-Manat. Al-Manat. So that was a form of shirk, because they would pray to Manat to go to Allah. Okay, so that's your shirk there. To give you another example, in Europe, in Christianity, or what was left of Christianity, saint worship began long after the time of Jesus. And there were different saints, and many historians believe that these saints could be based upon the many gods of the Greeks and the Romans. So the Greeks, the Romans, they had Neptune, for instance, the god of the sea. Venus is the god of love. So when you deal with matters of the sea, they would set up, they would pray to and sacrifice to Neptune because they were going on a seafaring journey. In matters of love and procreation, it's Venus or Aphrodite. And then saints started to develop. So individuals who were generally good people, but they gave them godlike qualities. That if you can give reverence to the person, to the saint will help you to get to God. And there's many different saints that came over the centuries. One is Saint Jude. Saint Jude. And some of you may know Jude, it may be before your time, this is in the time of the Beatles, right? So you know the Beatles, the famous rock stars. They said, "Hey Jude, don't make it bad." So "Hey Jude" was one of their most famous songs. They won all the awards with this, Jude. And there's different understanding about who Jude was. You know, was it John Lennon's first wife or, you know, whatever, there's different theories. But this spread all over the world, all over the Christian world. Because Jude, according to some reports, they said that Jude was preaching the gospel and he traveled to Mesopotamia, meaning Iraq, Libya, Persia, and he traveled with another famous person by the name of Saint Simon the Zealot. And it is believed, this is all within their stories and mythology, but it's believed that they were both killed, they were martyred, either in Persia or Armenia. But Jude became, Saint Jude became the patron saint of hopeless, a person who's hopeless, lost, desperate, right? Impossible situation. You have an impossible disease, right? You're an impossible, so you call to St. Jude. And you'll see many hospitals are called St. Jude Hospital, especially the ones that were dealing with cancer and, you know, when it was really, people were really afraid of these things. And the Beatles said, you know, "Hey Jude, you know, don't make it bad." But that meant a lot to a lot of people. So by praying to Jude to get to God, that would be shirk, see? So this is how the shirk comes in, partnership. And any way that this partnership comes in, it is considered to be something that we avoid as Muslims, okay? So that's one of the base points that we want to understand as we continue on in our topic in this season. And everybody knows now we're in the winter solstice. our clothing has changed, right? The days now, it's dark most of the time. Okay, so we're in a different season now. Fortunately for us, we have lights and we have television, we have social media, we have all. Just imagine if you had none of this and you're in a dark season and cold. You don't have central heating. Okay, so in many of the ancient societies, this was a very serious time of the year. It's the winter. So the solstice is right in the middle. So it's 21st, 22nd. That's the solstice, the medium point in the year. Okay, and you'll see that nature-based ancient pagan religions had big ceremonies on the different solstice types, right? That was one of the key points for the basis of the nature-based religions. Okay, and but also the Greeks and the Romans, they had special ceremonies during this time as well. One of them, for the ancient Greeks, it was called the Bacchanalia. The Bacchanalia. So this was December 21st, for the so-called god Bacchus. And Bacchus was the god of wine and sport and play and whatnot. So this Bacchanalia, a riotous event that used to go on in ancient Greece, right around this time. Okay? So the winter season now, going into it, is a riotous time. For the Romans, they had what is called Saturnalia. And that is a festival for Saturn, the god of time, the god of the sun, right? And that began on the 17th, and it continued for 7 days. So that would take you like right into the 24th, okay? Because the 21st is the actual center of the solstice. But this ceremony was also known for drunkenness, obscenity, disorder. So it was a time where you just get drunk and wild and go into different things. Or during that, let it all out, as they say. Okay, like Nike Air, they wanted to sell their shirts. So they said, just do it. You remember that? So if you saw someone said, just do it, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? Just do anything, right? That's a mentality. That's Saturnalia mentality, okay? And the Druids, who had some of the ancient religions in the north, especially in the UK and these northern regions, they had ceremonies, especially in their places of worship, like the Stonehenge. You find the Stonehenge, Avebury and these things in England. So they had different ceremonies during this time as well. And they had this mysterious plant that they call a mistletoe. The mistletoe. Okay, so this was one of their plants. They said it's got godlike qualities. The Germans, because it gets cold there, really cold in Germany like us, so the ancient Germanic tribes, they had a feast from the 12 nights from December 25th to January 6th. They had this festival. December 25th to January 6th. Okay? And this is interesting because if you look at the Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, it's Christian. But they don't have Christmas on December 25th. Okay, their Christmas is then in January, January 6th, 7th. This is their Christmas because it's connected with this festival because it ended on the 6th of January. Okay, so that was their festival with this struggle going on between the gods and the planets. So that was the winter feast held in Germany. So these things are long before the time of Jesus. That's part of the original religion of the people there in that area. And we had discussed a little bit also, but it's important for those who might not be familiar with what we said, is that there was a cult formed originally in Persia, and it spread all around the Mediterranean. So these were the followers of Mithras. Okay? And they called this time Sol Invictus, representing the time of victory of light over darkness. Because after December 21st, it starts changing back. So the days start getting, the nights are shorter and shorter and shorter. Light is starting to win again, right? So that's Sol Invictus. And Mithras was their sun god. He mediated between people and the supreme being, right? That's the shirk again. He's like a mediator. And his birthday, according to some historians, they believe what was celebrated in this cult was December 25th. So a lot of big birthdays and festivals happened on December 25th. So it was a key day for them amongst the days of the solstice. It was December 25th. Okay? And amongst them, Sunday is the seventh day of their week. Okay? His number was seven. That was Mithra's consecrated number. Okay, and the seventh day of the week that we now call Sunday, okay, that was consecrated not in early Christianity, because in early Christianity they were Jewish, all of Jesus' followers. So they had the Sabbath, Saturday. But Constantine in 325 AD instituted as the holy day, Sunday, not Saturday, for the sun, right? And this is where the cult of Mithras comes in. And it's interesting because the church, for a period of time, they banned the name Mithras. Because when you start studying Mithras or Mithra, his image is almost the same as what some people say today is Jesus Christ. Where did that image come from? Why can a Jewish person look at a Christian person and say, I'm Jewish and you're Christian? Like there's two different religions. Not supposed to be two different religions. Because Jesus said, and it's even mentioned in the Bible, he did not come to destroy the law of Moses, but he came to fulfill the law. All of his followers, they were all following the law of Moses. Why is it that now there's a separation? It's this image, this other religion that was superimposed over the teachings. And so Christmas, okay, that's really the epicenter of this season. And people will say Christmas is the birthday of Christ, okay? But the reality is that even according to Christian historians and theologians, when they talk about Mary in the manger, they say that the shepherds, that's how the story goes, the shepherds had their flocks outside. That's they didn't do that in the winter season. It's cold. In Palestine now, you know, well, Iyadubillah, and may Allah make it easy for them, it's cold at this time. So the way they describe, even in their texts, it would have been in the warm season when he was born. According to the Islamic, the Quran, that Mary, or Maryam, may Allah be pleased with her, she was told to go out when she was right having her baby, go out of the city under these date palms, shake it, and ripe dates will come down. Rutuban janiyah, ripe dates. The dates ripen in the heat. So it's like late July, August, early September. That's when you're going to get ripe dates. So according to us, he's born in the summer, not born on December 25th. Okay? So this you see now, okay, something's happening here. How can it switch? How now can they say that Christmas, which has nothing to do with Jesus, the ceremonies in the winter season, the Bacchanalia, the Feast of the 12 Nights, has nothing to do with Jesus. So like, what is happening here? There was some amalgamation. And how it happened, we don't know. But we do know that those followers of Jesus who were left, generally following Paul and his teachings, they were being tortured by the Romans. They really suffered. And some people say, when in Rome, do like the Romans do. Or if you can't beat them, join them. Like people can only take so much torture and pressure. So somebody mixed it. Like they came, it came together. Somebody brought it together. Fusion. It's a fusion of the different religious systems. One is strictly monotheism. It's following the law of Moses. The other one is nature-based or sun god-based. They came together to form this new understanding. Christmas season also, for most people, is the time of Christmas gifts. Don't go shopping in the mall this weekend. Next weekend, madness. The closer you get to the 25th, madness. Now they change things. What is it, Black Friday and whatever. Now the business people have imposed things because they want you to buy gifts. It's a materialistic time, okay? But where did the gifts come from? It actually was in the Saturnalia, they would give gifts to people. Sometimes they make little figurines, and they would say to each other in their Latin, Bona Saturnalia, right? That's what they used to say to each other as they give the gift. Today they give the gifts and they say, Merry Christmas. So it carried on. It continued. Decorations. The decoration, illuminations of everything. These decorations, because unfortunately, well, fortunately, whatever, but Christianity, you know, as a religion, believing in God, this is dying in this culture. And even some of the Christmas traditions are not celebrated. When I was growing up here in North America, and would be in Toronto, I wasn't in Toronto, but close enough, lights would be all over the place. You'd walk down the street and you'd see houses lit up. Okay, especially when you come close to December 25th. These were also done by the Romans in their Colosseums and what that was part of the Saturnalia. So lights, okay? That's part of it as well. The most important person in this season is Santa Claus. And they've already had a parade for him in Toronto, right? It's the Santa Claus parade. It doesn't mean much now in this society, but you go back 30, 40 years ago in here, these things were big things, especially for the younger generation. But the point is now, when you say the word Christmas to most people, the first thing that comes in their mind would be Santa Claus. Okay? So who is this individual? Isa alayhi salam, Jesus, now is a Semitic person, you know, coming from the Middle Eastern region. You know, who's Santa Claus? Because Santa Claus generally is an older man, large face, big white beard, right? For the Bacchanalia, he would be Bacchus. The depictions of Bacchus would be this type of individual, okay? And Silenus, the chief of the Satyrs. Saturnalia had Saturn. In all of these events, there was a venerable older man who was the image. Okay, so this is the image now coming in the place of Jesus. But now they're saying Santa Claus. break the word down. Santa Claus comes from Saint Nicholas. Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus. You see? So Saint Nicholas was a very serious, they describe him as a very serious, austere Christian bishop who lived in what is now Turkey. It's called Asia Minor, Anatolia, in the 4th century. That's when he lived. And he was known by the Christians, he was the saint of children throughout the Western world. But he wasn't a heavy-set man, right, with reindeers and flying around. No, he was fasting all the time and very serious kind of person. But his name, because he was the saint of children, so somehow somebody who's piecing these things together for a culture in the society, they used his name, and now he becomes a key person in this ceremony. And he's an important person, because according to the beliefs, what they were teaching to children, unfortunately, I grew up in a society like this, where we had a Christmas tree in the house, and even though we didn't have a chimney, I lived in a housing project, like the hood, right? You know, we didn't have a chimney, but those who had a chimney, this man was supposed to come down your chimney and then put the presents under the Christmas tree. That's what we're told. And we would even look out to see, is he coming? Okay? And your poor father who spent, or mother who spent their time earning the money, got no credit. Santa Claus got the credit. How can this man keep his beard white if he's going down millions of chimneys with the soot, right? Somehow he does it. So it becomes a type of godlike creature. He is, right? And the chimney, right? Now this chimney, the early Germans, right, they had the Norse goddess Hertha, or Bertha, the goddess of domestic life in the home, right? So the chimney meant something in Scandinavia and in the north. Okay, and so they superimpose poor Santa Claus. There he is. He's trying to make it down that chimney, but he's got to hold his breath. But he's making it down. Inside the house, there's different decorations. Holly is one of them. Okay? And the Druids believed that this evergreen plant, because you'll see it in the Christmas trees and in the holly and mistletoe, these plants are alive. And all the different other plants died. Look at the beautiful trees that were around us. They're all stripped. But there's certain plants that stay green. Why? The ancient people believed there's something holy or special, some power inside of that plant. So it becomes a type of amulet. So this now got really serious for the Christian church. And when they tried to go back, there was a group in the 17th century in Britain they called the Puritans. And the Puritans took over power in the UK, just to give you an example. They actually banned Christmas. Think about this. This is the British Parliament. They banned Christmas. And they didn't want to hear about St. Nicholas. Because in the German area, St. Nicholas was actually a demon called Nicker. He was a demon dressed in red. Okay, in German culture. And so they didn't want to hear about St. Nicholas. And he was an evil spirit from the north. Okay? So this is what was going on during this time. And the diffusion came. And then with the world changing and materialism coming in, it's transported. American culture comes in and they make everything commercial. It's money making now. And now we see what's going on Christmas has become like a more of a commercial thing. There are some Christians who will still celebrate in the church, but unfortunately, it's very few now. It's mainly a materialistic time. And if you look at the roads, there's more accidents. Our classes, we'll have one more class next week, but the next 2 weeks, we're going to take a break. Because driving on these weekends is insanity. And people are drinking alcohol. There is more accidents on the road during this time than maybe any time of the year. Why? If it's the birthday of Christ, then why are there more people drunk on the road? Why are there more accidents on the road? That is because it's not the celebration of the birth of Christ. It is the pagan Christmas. It's the Saturnalia, which has now come and seized the mentality of the people. So this is what we're dealing with now. And it's important for us to know. It's not a major thing, but we need to, some people are trying to bring this back now as Canadian culture. They're trying to bring it back. And some Muslims get confused. One Muslim came to me and said, no, I'm a Canadian. You know, I want a tree. He said, okay, I'll use a date palm tree in my house. I won't use evergreen. Okay? So we need these ceremonies. Just like they said Halloween, that we learned was the time of the devil. So some Muslims said, okay, we won't have Halloween, we'll have Halalween. Right? We'll have our version of Halloween. Okay? So we need to understand what it is, and the youth need to know what it is, because this new type of paganism is coming back in our society in different ways. But it's seeping back in, especially using materialism as its base. Okay? So I want to open up the floor for any questions that anybody may have concerning this is the myth of Christmas. The myth of Christmas. Floor is open for any questions that anybody has.
There's a question online. Mm-hmm.
Yes, myths develop. It's a natural thing, and it's not just in Europe, all over the world. As a matter of fact, in the Muslim world, we have serious problems with these myths. We have saints that people will go to their graves and worship more than in the masjid, in Muslim countries, right? That's shirk that came into the Muslim world like it came into other religions as well. Christianity is more clear because at least we have a base to go back to. But because Christianity did not have the solid, authentic sources to go back to, they lost it. And now you have different churches, different understandings. But we have shirk in the Muslim world as well. And it's powerful. And we have to struggle against it also. But fortunately, we have our sources we can go back to in order to know what the original message was. So this is something, you know, that is very serious and happens all over the world. Now, any other general questions anybody has? Floor is open. So this is the myth of Christmas, and we have done a series on this called Holiday Myths. And you can get that online. In book form, you can get lecture form to understand more, you know, what it is. And again, this is something creeping back into our culture, and it's important for us to understand where we stand as Muslims with this. Okay? So the floor is open now for any general questions that anybody has concerning Islam. The floor is open. Any general questions? Everybody's cold, right? Your brains are, everybody's frozen, right? Okay, floor is open. This is a chance to ask questions and, you know, whatever concerning other issues in Islam. The only thing, the only issues I can't, deal with right now because of the confusion is politics. If you all know politics, this is not the class for a political discussion. Okay? But the floor is open. Yeah.
Because we're in this time of the year, and like as a reverse, we know a lot of people who celebrate Christmas or observe their whatever. Like, what's the mannerisms of a Muslim when maybe someone offers you a gift, someone invites you to their home?
So this is a good question because, it's not like trick-or-treat where they're knocking on your doors, all the time. And generally, Muslims, you can accept a gift. Okay, so we accept gifts. However, we don't give gifts at the time of Christmas. We don't, especially if the gift is somebody, your neighbor or something, you don't want to be negative on people. But we don't give gifts. Maybe what you can do on Eid day, when we have our celebration, then give your neighbors a gift. So this is our time to give gifts. But we're not going to carry on, like that. But it is, when you have a Christian family, we still have to respect our families. And sometimes Christmas season is a time when people get together. So you may, go over your parents' house. Nothing wrong with that. The only problem is, and I've experienced this myself and others who have, come into Islam, is when people start drinking. Some people put rum in the pudding or wine, right? And when they start to drink, then you need to excuse yourself. The other thing is, in some cultures, not all Christian cultures, on your Christmas table would be a big piece of pork, right? So that's, that part of it we would avoid. But to pay respects to your family, there's nothing wrong, with that.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar,
Allahu Akbar.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
Question?
So you said, when the alcohol comes out, that's when you excuse yourself. But a lot of times at these functions, like, the first thing that's asked when people get to the door is, what are you drinking? Like, it's not something that comes out later. It's something that's part of the entire gathering. So in that case, should people just be avoiding it completely?
Yeah, I mean, each family might be slightly different. But the more we can, you know, have our families understand that we're Muslims and we don't drink, they should understand that. You know, if not, you can, you know, it's, you know, I would look at it as dawah. You explain to them, I don't drink. And then you can explain. But if alcohol is right from the beginning, then generally, that would generally be a problem. Because alcohol changes people. They start saying things and doing things. Inhibitions go, like, you know. So that would, but in some families, that they wouldn't do that right. Especially if they have some respect for the fact that you're Muslims, based upon the level of the family's respect and their knowledge, they might hold the alcohol for later, once you've gone. So the more we can establish, is the better. Anything else online?
Yeah, there's a couple that came in. How and why did the myth of Christmas in the churches, especially in the U.S., was never challenged? For example, the three wise men, etc.
Yeah, the myth of Christmas was challenged. Even amongst the Christians, there's a group called Jehovah's Witnesses. They openly came out. And, you know, and other Christian groups came out against it. And you will see, I remember years ago when people used to read the Toronto Star, nobody reads papers now, but every Christmas there's an article, editorial almost, talking about the pagan myths that happen at Christmas season. So it's known. And it was challenged. But it was kept, I think, in America more like a business thing. I mean, they're making more money now than they do for the rest of the year. So they want Black Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, whatever. So as long as they can keep the money flowing, right? You destroy Christmas, you're destroying half of their income. Okay? But generally speaking, more and more people, they understand that there's so much confusion, you know, there. And sometimes Muslims are more confused and innocent. We're trying to take on culture. I'm Canadian now. Not knowing, that's not being Canadian, right? That's somebody's culture. You don't have to do that to be a law-abiding citizen in Canada. You can be a Muslim. And don't be ashamed to be a Muslim. Another question. As with the last part,
is there any element of Christmas celebrations that would be reminiscent of Prophet Isa's message,
It's changed so much. I mean, originally, you know, the whole idea of the birth of Christ, the mother being a virgin and whatnot, you know, the real religious ceremonies, you know, there is some truths that are in that. And I'll go... Next class, inshallah, I'll go into it a little bit. You know, but originally, you know, there were some, you know, traditions similar to ours that were in it. But now the paganism just taken it over so much that, you know, it becomes, you know, confusing. And Muslim countries wanting to be impressive to the West, you know, they just follow along the West and not know. I one year I was taught this class on the myth of Christmas, and I was traveling, I think it was, you know, we stopped in Abu Dhabi, in the Emirates. They had the biggest Christmas tree on earth. This is Muslims, right? The biggest Christmas tree on earth. When this thing, you know, is a pagan symbol in the house, symbolizing life inside your house. It's like an amulet. But they wanted to impress the West. And they have more extra money than anybody else. So they had the biggest tree. But we have to separate ourselves and be clear and distinct, especially with the younger generation. Last question. Any others?
Yeah. Was the time of these paganistic developments the same as the slaughtering of many of the followers of Arius?
Of Arius? Yeah. No, Arius was 325. That was later on. That was before that happened. Okay. So inshallah, we're going to break the class now because the Isha prayer is going on. For anybody who wants to come back, I'll be here for a little bit longer. if anybody had any other questions or anything like that. But we're going to break for Isha prayer. The official class is over now. Inshallah, we'll see you again next week. Have a safe journey home. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.